tonight on Preposterous Gamer, we bid farewell 2013, which is kind of a good thing because 2013 was an asshole. Sit back and I'll talk about the year, and we'll top it all off with my best 10 games of 2013. All that and more tonight on the Preposterous Gamer. Hey, welcome back to Preposterous Gamer. Truth be told, I didn't want to do this today. I've been sick for the last week and want to hold off until next week, but iTunes is going to do something weird with their podcast updates from 21st to 27th, or maybe it's 20th. No, 21st. So things aren't going to be updated there. I know a lot of people like getting podcasts from iTunes. So I'm doing this today, going to recap 2013, which is a good year. Well, is a good and bad year. But I don't want to focus on bad too much. So this has been a hell of an amazing year for Infinite Lives. I mean, we've gone for a whole year now. This is pretty damn cool. I mean, when we started just a year ago, it was just John, Dan, P, and myself. Dan H, you know, wasn't a full part, which it's great having him on board. We were recording with less than my ideal of equipment. And, well, our website looked like complete and total crap. And we didn't really do video content that much. So, hey, doing some good stuff this year. This year, you know, we've updated the website, which was great. Well, except for the work involved. Man, that that was a very unfun week. And then we upgrade our sound equipment. We've got real microphones, a real soundboard. We've been doing a good amount of video content, I think, considering, you know, we all do have our day jobs. And, you know, things are going good. So, oh no, my highlight for this year was first getting the sound equipment, because I am an audio geek. And when I say that, I mean both I like good quality like music, but also I love recording equipment. It's my ideal toy. So, you know, I've been upgrading the microphones even after getting the full sound equipment set up. And I think another good highlight for us, probably my favorite thing of this year. Well, let's get to that one last. Sorry, I'm a little scattered brain because, like I said, I've been sick, but I want to get this up before iTunes craps out. So I think my almost biggest highlight would be we've gotten some real cool interviews. You know, we interviewed the guys from Analgesic Productions, you know, who made Anodyne. And, man, those guys were really cool. I mean, they were a blast to talk with. They were just laid back and fun. And, you know, interviewed them on the PAX Indie Area 4, which didn't even know if that would turn out, you know, listenable. Because, man, that place is loud. And that's another good highlight for me was this was first year, even though PAX is pretty much in my backyard. First year I finally went to PAX, and that's great going, you know, the whole team, we were all there. Really just had probably the most fun with the indie booth or the indie area. I mean, that's where all of the, oh no, the fun quirky games. I'm the indie geek, so, you know, those were my type of games. But beyond the Analgesic Productions interview, you know, Dan got an interview with Megaran, which, man, I love his music. I never heard his music until Dan's interview, and, well, I'm a fan now. And then also Dan interviewed his friend Rick. I forget Rick's friend who was also on it. And they're involved with the, I think it's Gamer X convention, or at least I think it's Gamer X. I'm sorry. I am kind of spacey. So, you know, that's pretty cool. And then, of course, we're all in together, except for Dan Helmick, which was unfortunate. But we all got to interview Patrick Klepek from Giant Bomb over Skype. And, man, that is a blast. I mean, he's really laid back. I've been a fan of his style of podcasting and his reporter style. So, you know, that's really cool. Even if he does like Final Fantasy VIII, which is a steaming pile of crap. So, you know, my favorite thing, though, of this whole year for us was Extra Life 2013. I mean, on one hand, is just me and some friends hanging out playing video games, which that's always good. But to make it even better, you know, well, to make it less better, unfortunately, Dan H. was with the Wizards of the Coast D&D group. So he wasn't there. Maybe next year, hopefully next year. I mean, he would have added to some energy, kept us a little more alert, or kept those of us who didn't drink down, what was it, 11 Red Bulls in 25 hours? Holy crap, why am I not dead? So anyways, that was a lot of fun, but we also raised some good money for Seattle Children's Hospital, which I'm a big fan of that because, truth be told, my day job is I work at Seattle Children's. So, you know, it's great being able to help an organization that I know actually does some real good work and also keeps me employed, which makes me happy to get paychecks. So I think the best part, though, was what Dan, he termed, I think, is the infinite hour, and it was from 1 a.m. until 2 a.m., and since it's daylight savings, that's 1 a.m. until 1:59 and 59 seconds, then 1 a.m. until 2, and that's when we just went crazy. We started a cult to Tom Hanks, so hey, Tom Hanks, guess what? You have a cult there, out there for you. Make sure, you know, if you want to see that, you could find it on YouTube on our channel. I mean, it's some insane stupidity and was brilliant. So, you know, that all was real good, which kind of brings me to, I want to talk about like the big news stories of the year. And I think one of them was, one of the biggest in my eyes was Extra Life raised over $4 million, which I think is more than they've done in all the previous years together. So, you know, to anyone who was an Extra Lifer, good job. To anyone who supported or anyone who watched, you know, great. In fact, better than the people who were participating. Those who donated were the best people. Because, I mean, $4 million. And that's despite four or more DDoS attacks. I mean, that's one of the stupid things of this year is I heard rumors and hearsay of what caused it. And I really don't give a crap what it really was, but it sounded petty and it is petty. Whoever would attack a charity on their big day, you could go fuck yourself. I mean, quite frankly, people were helping kids. And if you don't want to help kids, then don't hurt them. So anyways, that was stupid, but Extra Life, you know, the community, we all pulled together. We showed that gamers can actually do good for, you know, for the world, not just live up to that stereotype of living in our parents' basement and all blah, blah, blah. I mean, gamers, we're good people. So another bit of news was LucasArts is dead. I mean, that's kind of a painful one. I grew up with X-Wing, TIE Fighter, the, you know, Monkey Island games, Grim Fandango. There are so many of these great old games. And, well, LucasArts turned into crap later on. So I guess is overdue. But still kind of sad, you know. It's a little painful. And speaking of painful, there's the Microsoft PR nightmare with the X-Bone. I mean, having an X-Bone now, I really wish they would have kept to what they originally said. It would have been really cool. But at the same time, if you don't explain what you're doing and why you're doing it, you're going to have a backlash. You can't make a change from what people have known for, you know, 30 years or more of console gaming and not explain it. You can't just bamboozle people like that. Then, of course, speaking of fiascos, there's the SimCity fiasco. In fact, you could sort of couple that with the Battlefield fiasco. I mean, EA with online stuff has been dying this year because they're not running their servers right. They're not holding themselves accountable for their games. So, you know what? EA, get your shit together. And it's kind of a shame. I really want SimCity, but as soon as I started hearing about the small city size, I wasn't happy. But when I heard you had to be online even to play single player, eyes out anyways. But then to screw that all over by not letting people actually get online, that's about as bad as you can do with an online-only game. And then, of course, the other news story, the final one, kind of a... This one probably hurt more than anything, and not hurt like LucasArts, I remember them, they were so good. No, I mean, this one actually was painful, the passing of Brian Davis back in July. I mean, he was a huge inspiration, I know, for John, Dan P., and myself, and I'm pretty sure he had some influence, or at least some sort of inspiration of some sort for Dan H., and pretty much anyone out there who does game podcasting, game blogging, game videos, game journalism. I mean, Ryan Davis was a huge force and was a lot of life, a lot of energy. So that was probably the darkest moment of this year. I mean, he's the type of guy who, even if you didn't know him personally, you know, you felt like you knew him just from listening to the Giant Bombcast. So, you know, that is sad, but I did love during PAX, during the Giant Bomb panel, and they cut the video for it on Giant Bomb. They showed the video of their panel, and they actually cut it. They cut it down to about 2 or 3 minutes, but there's a good probably close 10 minutes standing ovation and chanting of Ryan's name. So that was really cool. I mean, that community kind of mourning together and celebrating together. And speaking of the Giant Bomb panel, that's another great moment for us, was at PAX. John, Dan P., and myself, we waited around afterwards, got to shake hands with and meet the Giant Bomb guys, and John got to pretty much say one of my favorite lines of the year. When meeting Jeff Gerstmann, he was saying, yeah, you know, we have a podcast because, you know, we figure if you could do it, we could too. Not quite realizing as he said it. I mean, we were sort of starstruck in a way. And great, the response from Jeff Gerstmann was, yeah, I guess they'll sell microphones to anyone. So that was kind of fun. Anyways, enough with recapping the news of the year. I want to give a few awards, or sort of dubious awards for some of these. So sit back and let's listen to my goofy awards before I get to the actual games of the year for me. So first up would be these are my awards, not the, you know, Infinite Lives team. We'll be recording tomorrow and we'll have actual group awards. So this is my opinions, no one else's. So first, best innovation. And personally, I was thinking, like, there weren't too big of innovations this year. This year more had, like, tweaks. You know, like, the Kinect 2, it's basically the Kinect, but upgraded. So, I mean, that's not a real innovation. I mean, the new systems, they're not really innovative. They're building on what's already out there and making them bigger, better, faster, smarter, stronger, and, you know, any other type of adjectives. So I was thinking, for me, it's either the PS4 motion keyboard, which if you, instead of using, you know, the analog stick or the D-pad to type in, you can actually click in, I think it's the right stick, and you have a motion-based keyboard. If anyone out there is familiar with the Roku with the motion controller, it kind of works in that type of feel and principle. And it is smooth. I mean, it really makes typing a lot quicker, and it's not saying crappy like the Wiimote, you know, for a keyboard. I mean, this, you don't need to point at a screen, you just kind of twist your wrist, and it actually glides so smoothly. Then there'd be GTA 5, the heists in it. I mean, it's kind of building on what we already know, but the heist really innovated, you know, the open world crime game, pushed it to a new level. Especially the final heist. Oh man, that was a great moment. And then also I'd say the Kinect not the Kinect itself, but the Kinect's ability to scan a QR code to put in a, you know, a 12 or 16 or however many digit key to redeem Microsoft point or money now, or to redeem Xbox Live Gold or redeem a game, so much better than typing in those old, you know, typing in those codes was a pain in the ass. And it is still a pain to type on the Xbone. And then kind of a small thing, but the fake glitches in Saints Row 4. I've seen games where you played inside sort of a matrix before, and including I watched John play Enter the Matrix. Man, that game sucked. But, you know, it's cool seeing these glitches that almost looked like your computer was glitching out on you, but it's actually a real, you know, element of the game. But in the end, I'd say that PS4 motion control keyboard is just fucking amazing. If you haven't used it, try it out. It seems really dumb. It sounds like using a Wiimote for a keyboard input, but it is so damn good. I never liked typing on a console, but this was first time where I don't want to do it, but I don't mind it as much. So next up, to go against the best innovation, the worst trend. And for me, there's early releases on everything. I mean, the joke always is with patches, no game is done when it's released. But now, like, if you go on Steam, everything is early release. Everything's a beta. And it's getting a little bit ridiculous because new games aren't being released. Betas are being released. And then to go with that, something else was high prices for early releases. So, I mean, for example, there are early release or beta titles where you're paying full price for them. When Minecraft came out, it is a good use of early release. You got an alpha and you paid dirt cheap. If you waited a while, you got a beta and you paid dirt cheap. And, you know, but it wasn't quite as cheap. The price goes up a little bit with every new version. So your money, you're paying less because you're actually supporting the development. And you going on the forums, that's how they're going to catch bugs. You're actually serving as their quality control team. But if you charge full price, you're playing a game that you don't want to play, or, you know, a game that you wish was complete, but you're still paying full price for it. I even saw one. I wish I knew which game this was. It's on Steam. It had an alpha in June where it's like $80 or $90. In July, the price dropped to like $70 or $80, and it kept dropping with new versions until it reached the real retail. They're actually charging you more to be their quality control team. That's not, think about it like this. There's indentured servitude way back in the past, and maybe some countries out there, hopefully not. But there's indentured servitude where you owe people and you have to work it off. There's slavery where you get paid nothing and you work. This, I mean, it doesn't fall anywhere on the same scale as slavery or indentured servitude, but in economic sense, it is just ass backwards. You're paying them to be their employee, their quality control team. If that's a good business model, you know what? Fuck it. I want out of games. I'm done. If that's saying that would catch on, I'm out. Then another one would be horrible network support at launch, and that's going back to that whole SimCity fiasco, a couple years ago is Diablo. There's the Battlefield like a month ago. I mean, if you're going to have a game come out and you're not going to have good network support, don't require network. And then the final one is all the delayed launch games, especially for PS4. I mean, Drive Club, that's supposed to be a launch game, delayed until next year. Then you had Sleeping Dogs, which launch game for both the PS4 and the Xbone, and essentially the reason I bought a PS4, reason I pre-ordered. I wanted to play it on the PS4. And that's delayed until next year. Rumors now are it might be second half of next year. They made it sound like, true, they never said a real date, but they made it sound like Infamous Second Son was going to be a launch game. And that's coming out, like, March. So, you know, that's kind of dumb. It kind of ruined what could have been an amazing launch. But in the end, for me, I'd have to say it's the high prices for early release games. I mean, that takes the cake, because I've seen that a few times, and no, it shouldn't be. You are serving as the QA support team, and you're reporting to the message boards about bugs you're finding that the game developers will fix. You should not be paying to work for someone at all. So, next award. Best game on paper, but worst in reality. I mean, these are games that if you wrote down a description of what it would be, it'd be amazing. But once you actually see the game, you see it all just fall apart into a pile of crap. So, first off, SimCity, because of that whole server fiasco, I mean, the game was ruined. Lunae Divitzi, you knew I was going to bring this game up at some point. You knew it. And, yeah, it's essentially sort of a Metroidvania type of exploration. No enemies, just explore. There's supposed to be, like, 7 different ways to beat the game. It is quick enough where you could beat it repeatedly, but big enough where you could explore and have fun. And in the end, the game had a bunch of places where you could fall into pits that you could never get out of. It didn't explain how to quit the game. They didn't want to give you any instructions, no option menu. They didn't want any text, any heads-up display. They just wanted you to have a immersive experience, which failed horribly. Another one, Xbone voice commands. And I'm sorry, but I know some people have good luck with it. My Xbox One does not listen to me. It'll listen when I tell it to turn on. That is it. After that, I'm on my own screaming at that damn thing. And I know John would say, well, it works fine for him, but actually last weekend I saw it giving him some trouble. So, oh no, they need to fix its vocabulary, I think. They'll probably hit something on a future, like, system update. Then Starseed Pilgrim. This was a game that supposedly would have a vibe a little bit like Fez. You know, it's kind of a weird puzzle that doesn't give you the rules. You have to puzzle it out yourself. And just, it's really hard to explain. But if you look at pictures, it looks like a really cool retro-style, pixel art-ish type of game. And it just sucked. It was boring. Like Lunae Divitzi, it didn't give you any real instructions. You didn't get any idea of what does what, how to do it. You were just thrown in, and by making it so immersive, all it did was make it where I didn't know what I was doing, and I was getting pissed off at it. I literally played that game for about 30 minutes, according to my Steam profile. 30 minutes. And then said, fuck it, I'm out. But in the end, for best on paper, worst in reality, still Lunae Divitzi, because if I wrote down all of what that game was, read it, I would love that description way too much. Now, on the flip side, worst on paper, but freaking sweet in reality. These are games, if you wrote down what they are, you'd say they sound like crap, but they actually were amazing. For me, Saints Row 4... I mean, it's Saints Row 3, more or less, same city, but you're thrown into virtual reality, there's aliens, and essentially you're president of the United States, and you have superpowers. Every part of that sounds so derivatively stupid, but the game was just fun. It is nothing short of fun. Knit or Night Underground. I mean, on paper, you play as a bouncing ball for half the game. It's a indie-style Metroidvania where you play as a bouncing ball. But that game was really good. A lot of fun. In fact, check it out on Steam. It's Knit, K-N-Y-T-T, Underground. It's pretty cheap, and if you like exploration-type games, check it out. It's a lot of fun. And then Rogue Legacy. A roguelike where it's a platformer where you just go through different generations of people who have things like baldness and irritable bowel syndrome and traits sometimes like ambidextrous. It just sounds kind of dumb. And that game was great. I mean, I think pretty much almost all of us with the podcast love that game because it's really addictive and you could play for just one life can last you as little as like a minute. Actually, one life could end in like 20 seconds because that game is hard, but it's just great. So in the end though, for me, worst on paper, but freaking sweet in reality, Saints Row 4. I mean, I went into it knowing it'd be good, but still, every description I read kept making me think more and more that this, maybe Volition went too far. Maybe they should call it quits. But they came out strong. They came out amazing. So next up, be my best gaming moment. Like, this is a moment where when playing, you just all of a sudden have that feeling of, this is what I need to be doing. I could do this and have no complaints. So, GTA 5, The Final Heist. That one, oh, is so good. I mean, it was everything. GTA 5 was so good of a game. But when you get to that final heist, it just is epic. I mean, there's no other way to put it but epic. Then, the opening screen on Zelda Link Between Worlds. When you turn it on, it sounds just like the Link to the Past opening. And you get the tumbling Triforce triangles. And all of a sudden, if you grew up on Link to the Past, you just have your childhood screaming out in joy, seeing and hearing that. And that music, the same music and tones. And then, first time playing with four people on Monaco, What's Yours is Mine, that game, it's a brilliant game, and playing with four people in this crime, you know, you're essentially a bunch of criminals stealing diamonds or whatever, little diamond shapes on the screen. I mean, it's a retro type of visual feel, but playing with four people with how much chaos and the teamwork involved is amazing. And then, I know I make fun of the Kinect a lot, but when the Kinect logs you into the X-Bone, that is pretty cool. I mean, all of a sudden, I remember over at John's place watching him play, like, Assassin's Creed, and then Helmick would walk through the room, and it just log him in automatically and say, "Hi, Daniel." That's really cool. I mean, Microsoft did some good shit. Unfortunately, they just failed on PR. So, anyways, for me, best gaming moment was that opening screen of Zelda Link Between Worlds, because that was it. My childhood, the inside of me is my little child self who screamed for joy instead of screaming at me for being a weird, weird person. Then, my special award, glitchiest clusterfuck of a good game. And this is for games that are just flat out broken. They need some patches, and badly. There are so many issues, but when it works, it works. And so GTA 5, which mostly works except the online originally. I don't count the online because I didn't care about that. But there were some glitches in that would really just piss me off. Getting stuck in objects, getting vehicles stuck in things. But overall, it wasn't too bad of a glitchy game. And then there's Kinect voice controls, which when they work, it's great. I mean, it'll go right where you want it to go. You could tell it to Bing something, and there you go. Where's my game? It'll find it. But when it doesn't hear you right, you scream at that shit. Then there's Contrast, the PS4 launch game, and it's also on Steam. Free on PS4 if you had PS Plus, at least free when it launched. I don't know if it still is or not. That game, beautiful story, beautiful artwork, really interesting. But one of your main powers is you could kind of dash. So you play as a person who could blend into shadows and goes from a 3D game to a 2D. And you can also dash. And when you dash, you kind of bash through things. It's how you break, like, wooden fences. And if you dash, you're going to get stuck in shit. You're going to get stuck in walls. And you're going to get stuck to the point of no escape. However, despite all of those glitches of getting stuck, that's my glitchiest clusterfuck of a good game. Contrast, it's beautiful, has a great 1920s type of vibe going to it. Just really fun, really good. So, best game I didn't play that I own-ish. And own or kind of own. So, there's BioShock Infinite. According to everything I heard, sounds like a wonderful game. I mean, Dan, you know, on his adventures in gaming earlier this week, he's talking about how much fun he had with it. I own it, never played it. Final Steam build of No Room Left in Hell. So, pretty much own it because it's a free thing. And No Room Left in Hell is a Source mod. Really fun game, at least the original mod that we used to play at LAN parties. Unforgiving first-person zombie apocalypse. You'll die, but if you're playing with friends, it is a lot of fun. Just insanity ensues. So my one for this, BioShock Infinite. Yeah, I only had two nominations. I've actually gotten around playing most of my games that I care about this year. Best multiplayer game, and I'd go with Towerfall, which is probably the only reason to have a Ouya. I'm sorry, Helmick, but the Ouya sucks. But Towerfall, if you've got a bunch of friends around, four players, simultaneous, nonstop insanity. Quick games, think Smash Brothers, but one hit, one kill. And then there's also, even though I only played it at PAX, I really need to pick it up, Samurai Gun, which, same sort of thing as Towerfall, but instead just having arrows you shoot at each other, you have swords, you've got three bullets. On Towerfall, you have, I think it's three arrows start, but then when people shoot arrows, you can pick them up. Samurai Gun, same sort of thing, really cool. Then Shoot Many Robots, or Robots, which it's fun. I mean, it's pretty much a run-and-gun type of game, and essentially the title says it all. You shoot many robots. And it's a good single-player game as well. Then Tokyo Jungle, which if you... Hopefully you know what that is from listening to our past podcast, because that game is insanity. You're a bunch of animals in Tokyo after all humans are gone, unless you play as an office worker, and you get to watch things like a little Pekingese dog taking on lions and giraffes and alligators. It is crazy, and when you play with a friend, it is even more crazy. Good one-player game, really cool two-player game, but unfortunately it caps out at two players. Then Monaco. It is my ideal multiplayer game. In fact, it wins. It wins hands down. You each play a different type of thief character. So there's the locksmith who can open doors and safes in a hurry. There's the cleaner who will sneak up behind guards and knock them out for a while. There's the mole, my personal favorite. He could burrow through walls. There's the pickpocket. It has a little monkey that'll pick up loose coins. It is just amazing game. I don't know if I could play it one player. I tried and I didn't have fun. Two player, I'm not sure if I could do either. Three, it's probably pretty good, but four player, you need to play Monaco four player. It is amazing. Next off, my worst Steam purchase or any platform purchase. And actually, there's only two in this. Lunae Divizi, you knew I'd say that. And Starseed Pilgrim. You knew I'd say that after what I said earlier. And quite frankly, you've heard my bitching about both of those. Well, both of them on this podcast and Lunae Divizi. If you've listened to any of our podcasts, you've probably heard about Lunae Divizi. And truth be told, the worst purchase, Starseed Pilgrim. Despite all of my bitching about Lunae Divizi, I looked, it's a dollar cheaper, and it comes with Wake, which is another really horrible game, but you get two crappy games for $5 instead of one really crappy game for $6. And you know what? That makes it the worst purchase. $6 versus $5, one game versus two. So fuck you, Starseed Pilgrim. I want my money back. And then, kind of covered this before, but I'm going off of notes I wrote down. Best moment of Infinite Lives for this year. And my personal best moments, it came down to gain the new sound system, of which I'm still upgrading. You might have heard the microphone sound a little different in the last few podcasts, because I've been moving us from dynamic mics to condenser mics. And if that doesn't make sense, it's pretty much better replication of sound quality. Unfortunately, it's also more echoey and picks up more room sound, but I don't think it's been an issue. I've been trying to catch things in post-production. There's the giant bomb panel and post-panel time, which, you know, we got to hung out with Vinny, Drew, Alex, Patrick, Jeff, Brad, you know, all from Giant Bomb. That was really fun, because they're just real cool guys. I mean, chatting with any of them was a lot of fun. Then there's the Patrick Klepek interview we did, which that was amazing. Like I said, he was a really cool guy. I mean, really just laid back, you know, down to earth, not, oh no, I don't think any of the Giant Bomb people or video game journalist type of people would really be pretentious. But, you know, because it is essentially video game stuff. I mean, it's about things that are fun. But he was really laid back. I mean, he, you know, even said, hey, we're doing a good job because we're making an effort. So that's kind of cool. Then there's the Analgesic Productions interview, which, like I said, those guys really laid back, really cool. And I love their games. Well, I love playing Anodyne, and I don't want to say what their new one that they're showing at PAX is called, because I'm going to end up ruining the name, but let me think. Actually, be truthful, I just cheated, paused this, looked it up, Even the Ocean. And yeah, they're a real cool interview. Then there's Extra Life, and especially the Tom Hanks Hour. Well, actually, it started with the Infinite Hour, which would be 2 hours, but it just kept going. And truth be told, it's Extra Life with an emphasis on the Tom Hanks time that really was the best moment for me this year. I mean, we had fun, we teamed up together, we got incredibly insane, and I was especially happy that I actually stayed awake all 25 hours. True, it took enough Red Bull to probably kill an elephant, but I did it. And as far as I know, my heart didn't explode. Maybe I'm still running off the Red Bull. And once I come down from it, maybe in 2016-ish, maybe at that point I'll realize my heart blew out like a year ago. But, oh well. Yeah, definitely Extra Life. I want to do it next year. I mean, it's not saying I want to do every day or something like that, but I really want to do that every year. I want to keep doing it, you know, having fun with the guys and also helping the kids. I mean, we raised as a team over $1,000. I mean, we started late in our pledging or our fundraising, and we pulled in that type of money. And I think next year we could do even better for them. So, you know, make sure you check us out next year. I think it's in October. So with all of those awards out of the way, let's dive into the meat of this podcast. What my best games of this year were. And I'll start off by just reading a little list of essentially every game I played that I thought really should get a shout out. Because some of these games won't make the top 10, or I should say they won't make the top 10 today, but there might be a moment where I just want to go back and play them just for the fun of it. Or there's just a little moment where, you know, it might not have been the best game, but it had me for a while. Like, it really had me. So, my games, no particular order. I'd say, one I need to mention, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, true, it's a game from previous years. These are games I played for first time this year. And yes, I complained about it not ending, but for the first 15 hours, that game was magic. If they would have designed that game to be 15 hours long, that would have been an amazing game. Instead, it went on for about 45 or 50 hours, and by that point, you really stop caring. But when you first start, it is big, it's colorful, it looks great, it's fun to play, you could customize your character a lot of ways. I mean, it's really cool, until it just doesn't end. Another one I want to mention, Ratchet & Clank Into Nexus on PS3. It's a download game, it's cheaper than a full price game, it's not quite a full Ratchet & Clank length. But at the same time, playing it, I was having a lot of fun, and then I just quit playing. I think it comes down to one simple thing. That game, well, that style of game, it kind of needs refreshed or retired. It's like with Rock Band, you know, Rock Band had its magic moment, but we're past that. I mean, that was then, we're living now. I mean, some things do have to end. Then, of course, Neem mentioned the good ones like Monaco, Tokyo Jungle, Samurai Gun, which we only played at PAX as a demo, but it was really cool. Towerfall on the Ouya. I mean, those are the multiplayer games. That's when you get a bunch of friends together, have a blast. There's also finally played Giana Sisters Twisted Dreams, which pretty cheap on Steam. If you like good old school platforms, I mean, essentially it's a sequel to a ripoff from of Super Mario. So you could even watch, there's video of that on our YouTube channel of the original ripoff game. But Giana Sisters Twisted Dreams, a lot of fun, really beautiful. I mean, the artwork for it is really great, and it has two sets of artwork as you change on the fly between what sister you're playing as. And it is amazing, two beautiful artwork pieces in one game. Then gotta mention games like Unepic, Night Underground. Essentially, these are the ripoffs of, you know, indie Metroidvania type of games. Not always great. Unepic, I got tired of. I got burnt out. Night Underground or Knit Underground got burnt out with that as well. But for the first, like, 10 hours, just fun. Really good. Then Contrast, which I mentioned earlier as the best clusterfuck of a good game. It's a real cool game, man. If you have a PS4, get it free, I think, still, probably. If you have PS Plus, which you should for the free games. And if you have Steam instead, pick it up. It's fun. I'm sure, hopefully, they've updated it by now. I really hope so. Then, I kind of have to mention some of the portable games that really did something for me. There is Plague Inc., where you are a virus or a bacteria or whatever, and you're trying to kill every human on Earth. Real cool fun, especially, I come from a science background, especially up until recently, I was a microbiologist. So for me, that's like, oh no, that's a special type of like geeky video game porn-ness. Then there's Super Stickman Golf 2, just a lot of fun. I mean, real simple game, it's good time killer. Same with Candy Crush, until I got tired of that. I mean, you can only take that type of game so long before you just get fed up. Knights of Pen and Paper, which is also on Steam, but it's on iOS, on Android. Really cool RPG, kind of meta, because you're playing some people who are essentially sitting at a table playing D&D. So, kind of a cool meta RPG. I should mention Shadowrun Returns. Not my favorite game. I did get burnt out before I actually beat it, but it's really cool to see, especially see that, you know, a Kickstarter game came out. I mean, there's always talk of Kickstarters failing even after they get funded or not coming out with what was promised. This was one that came out with what was promised. It just needs more adventures and needs a player that's not me. but I give it mad props. And then, gotta mention Peggle 2, which Dan was joking with me yesterday that it is the most expensive game any of us bought this year, because my Xbone right now has one game on it, Peggle 2, which means I paid $520 before tax for Peggle 2. And I'm an idiot. See, that's why the child inside of me usually screams at me and not screams for joy. Because I can be pretty dumb with my money a lot of the time. So anyways, all those out of the side, let's dive into my top 10 games of the year. When we do this on the podcast, we're going to talk about our top games on the Infinite Lives podcast, the big group one. And we're probably not going to have a numbered list because we all play different games. We would never be able to agree on a numbered list. In fact, in the end, I imagine Dan Helmick will have choked John to death with a microphone cable. Dan screams so loud that all of our eardrums burst, you know, on our headphones. And then in the end, somebody will scroll a list that they call definitive in their own blood. So, yeah, we're not going to have a numbered one on that. But since I am me and only me, I've got a numbered list. These are not games that, you know, have special merits to make them great. They only are being judged on one factor. Did I have fun? Was it a fun game? Is it a game I look back on and go, holy shit, that was a good game? Or maybe they're games I'm still actually playing, or games that I'm almost tempted right now pause and go back and play for a little bit, because looking at this list, there were some really cool games this year. So let's get this rolling. At number 10, I have to say Marvel Puzzle Quest. Helmick got me addicted to this game, and it's essentially a Bejeweled, you know, match 5 type of game, but you have heroes that you're leveling up, so if any of you know the good old Puzzle Quest game, same sort of thing, but all of your heroes are different Marvel characters that you find comic book covers for. They all get different abilities. It's a little frustrating leveling your characters because you have to earn comic book, like recruit tokens. Sometimes you'll actually earn the covers and know what they are ahead of time, but a lot of times you don't know what you're going to get, which it's annoying when you're trying to level up someone because they're level capped based on what covers you found, and each character has 2 or 3 covers, which will give them their powers. And until you find the cover, let's say with Iron Man's blue power, he is not going to have his cryoblast, and he also can't be fully leveled up because you have a level cap based on your total number of powers. But it's a lot of fun. They throw out new contests all the time. Like, they just wrapped up one where I got the Punisher, which was really cool. Ended up learned that there's different brackets for it, or different leagues, because Helmick had a higher score than me and ended up 66th place or something like that. And I ended up, well, I want to say I was, like 6th place, which was really cool, but I had lower points than him. So they break it up probably based on when you start or how powerful you are, because Helmick is far more powerful than me. But really fun. It's free. It's free to play. You can buy things, but this is actually the first free to play I have not bought anything for. I haven't been tempted by anything for, because the game gives you everything you need. You do have an energy limit. When you get hurt, you have to wait for your heroes to recover or they will remain hurt. And you can play with your other characters. You have up to 3 at a time in a battle, but you have as many as you want to pay for, but you pay with coins that you can earn in the game, and you earn them regularly enough. I've got room for 10 characters. I think you start with 5. So, you know, you don't have to pay. In fact, if there's an award for best use of free-to-play incentives or purchases, this one would win for me because you don't have to pay to win the game. You just play, and you just have fun. You have new tournaments all the time. Now it's the Hulk that you're trying to recruit, which I'm hoping I do good because, hey, I want more characters. It's a great game. And you could pick it up for just a couple minutes at a time. I mean, you could really just have it as a quick time killer. Number 9 would be Rogue Legacy, which, already described, it's essentially a roguelike game. You have permadeath, but you keep having new characters that come from the same gene line. Really fun game. It's a good platformer. It's hard as hell, and it takes a long time power up enough to do anything, but it's really fun. You have all sorts of fun classes. My personal favorite was playing as the Hokage, which it's the upgraded ninja, real low health, but fast and good, real strong attack. There's also knights, wizards, thieves. So real cool game, real fun. Number 8 would be Guacamelee, which it is cool. Essentially, it's a Metroidvania, all with the theme of luchador, you know, Mexican wrestling. You're a wrestler, you learn different moves, real cool sense of humor to it, real cool artistic vibe. It looks like Mexican artwork, and it is a lot of fun. It's a great game. It's on Steam. It's also on your PS3 or 360, I don't know. But it has drop-in and out multiplayer, so second player could just pop in. And, I mean, what Metroidvania game do you have where you could do that? And the humor's real good. Real solid game all around. And we've talked a lot about it on the podcast, and quite frankly, just pick that game up. I mean, if you like Metroidvanias, there you go. Speaking of Metroidvanias, number 7 would be The Swapper. The Swapper is, imagine combining a Metroidvania 2D exploration side view game with Portal and some additional new things. So you essentially don't have enemies you're fighting. It's all about puzzle solving, kind of like Portal would be. But at the same time, your ability is you could shoot out a gun that will let you make a clone of yourself, and you could shoot with the other button to swap places with that clone. So whichever one you aren't, you know, is controlled in the same way you are controlled, but only you can actually do certain things. And it throws in, like, mechanics of different lights, and you can't shoot your swapping gun through one light color. You can't shoot your cloning gun through another light color. Really good puzzles. If you like Portal, it has that level of thought intensity. You know, some real tough puzzles, some real easy ones, some fun ones. Not many aggravating ones. Only one puzzle in the whole game even caused me to get the least bit upset. And when I play games, I yell, I scream, I make my dogs bark and then cower in terror as I'm screaming at the TV or computer. This one didn't bring about that feeling. Another one that also didn't bring about too much screaming, a lot of fun. Number 6 would be Gunpoint. Gunpoint, it's a side view game. You play as a private investigator type of guy. Your special ability is essentially you hold down the button to use your, I think it's your rocket pants or your jump pants or something like that, to do crazy out of proportion jumps. And the game's all about avoiding guards, getting the intel or getting whatever you're trying to find and getting out of the place without being seen. Really, just it's stealth mechanics done right, which, if not for Marka and Ninja last year, I'd say no one knows how to do stealth mechanics until this game came out. Number 5, definitely not a game from this year, but it took me a while to get to it, is Fez. Fez, if you don't know it, it is pretty much just pixel art, beautiful masterpiece. The game holds so much more than you think it does. I mean, it's a deep, deep mental puzzle where it doesn't hold your hand, doesn't tell you what you're doing, and you essentially beat the game twice. First time, you're looking for these yellow cubes, and when you find enough of them, you essentially beat the game. But there's hidden the anti-cubes, these blue cubes, that really require some of the most insane puzzle logic ever. And I'm really hoping in the end that Phil Fish goes back on what he said. He was pestered by some assholes in the game, journalist, podcast, whatever business. But he was pestered and essentially said he's out, he quits. But hopefully he comes back because I need Fez too. Number four for me be Ni No Kuni, which I almost forgot came out this year. I love JRPGs, not a huge Pokemon type of fan, but this game has Pokemon logic to it. You beat up monsters and you could charm them to join your party, but it's, you know, all I want to say is Level 5 designed the game, and Studio Ghibli, which, if you know, Miyazaki, and, you know, Miyazaki did Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, My Neighbor Totoro. It's his studio that did all the artwork, and I think the story work. And it's a really cool, really fun JRPG. Really just goes back to the old school while looking like a Miyazaki film. I mean, what more can you ask for? I mean, I'm a Miyazaki fanatic, and I'm also a JRPG fanatic. And this kept it good and old school, unlike, you know, direction, let's say, Final Fantasy games tend to go of re-innovate and recreate. This took what's good and just ran with it. And it's amazing. And it's the best looking game of this year for me, hands down. Then number three, Saints Row 4. It's not as good, I'd say, as Saints Row the Third, but if you want to call a game a meal, you know, like, if you look at saying, like, oh no, Saints Row the Third, that would have been the best gourmet hamburger with a great milkshake, with, like, hand-cut French fries, you know, really just good fast food. Saints Row 4 is dessert. It is a big, huge cake. I mean, there is nothing quality really about it. It's just fun. Every part of it is just fun. You just go in, you fuck around. That's all you do, is essentially fuck around. The jokes are hilarious. It makes fun of Mass Effect really well. You have your central hub, which is your spaceship, and you could romance the people on your ship. And it makes fun of that from Mass Effect. You've got you know, the Matrix part of it, where you're inside a virtual reality world, you've got superhero powers. I mean, you've got telekinesis. You can sort of hover, well, glide, I should say. You can super jump. The only complaint I really had was you don't drive cars anymore. I mean, there is no reason to. You run quicker than a car can ever go. You jump over buildings. But it is dessert. It is just yummy. It is delicious. You don't feel good playing it, as in you don't feel like you're getting something to grow with, something to think about. But instead, you just want it. It's addictive. Number two for me, be Legend of Zelda: Link Between Worlds, which, like I said before, just loading it up the first time and hearing and seeing the intro, you're back to A Link to the Past. And even though it's essentially the same world, it's all new. I mean, the weapons are all open pretty much almost from the beginning. The dungeons are all in the same places, but there's few tweaks to the world map, especially in the Dark World. Just like Link to the Past, there's the regular world and the Dark World. Dark World has some shifts to it that make you explore in new ways. The dungeons, though, are all in same places for the most part, except for in what I call second dungeon of the light world is in a new place, but you still end up where second dungeon of the Link to Past light world was as a dungeon. It's a lot of fun. It has collectibles that actually rewards you for it. you know, it's essentially revisiting a great old game and giving it a whole new life of its own. And speaking of life, you know, life to an old thing, number one, I think this will probably be the Infinite Lives podcast number one as well, GTA 5. Grand Theft Auto 5, holy shit, it has no right being this good. I mean, if this was on PC, or PS4, or Xbone, maybe it'd have the right to be as good as it is. How well it runs on last generation consoles. I mean, it's PS3 and 360. I played the PS3 version, and there is no way the game should run this smoothly, look this good, and have, like, no loading screens. I mean, the only load screens are if you die or if you, you know, actually first load up the game. And, yeah, there are, I guess, hidden loading screens. When you swap characters, it'll go to, like, a Google Maps satellite view as it zooms in on where you are. But it's not really a load screen in my mind. The game has, I thought, three characters swapping around would be kind of dumb. In the end, it's amazing. All three characters were so fleshed out. I mean, you had, like, real good development. I mean, some people complain about Trevor. Trevor being the sociopath, the psychopath. Well, you know what? I actually really liked his character because he was essentially the id. He was the impulsive, just don't think about, just live on passion, live on what you do. And he still had principles. He just didn't have principles that a sane human would call good. But he did have, you know, some good elements to him. Like, there's actual depth to these characters. I did not expect that. And when I first heard about the heist, especially swapping between your characters in the middle of a mission. So, you know, they sold it as, so you're robbing a bank and one guy is inside and you are playing as him holding up the people. Then you swap out to outside where a guy with a sniper rifle is ready to cover you. I thought, this sounds really dumb. It wasn't. It was so good. It was amazing. I mean, Rockstar, they really knew what they're doing with this. And I can understand why it took so long between GTA 4, or I guess between Ballad of Gay Tony, because that was pretty much another GTA game all on its own. I understand why it took so long from Ballad of Gay Tony to get GTA 5 out, because they were reinventing what the PS3 and the 360 could accomplish. And they also crafted a beautiful story, amazing world, great visuals. The visuals are fantastic. There is nothing I can honestly complain about. And keep in mind, I don't play GTA online. I tried it a little bit, and I got exactly what I expected, which is, say, I expected to not want to play it, and I didn't buy the game for GTA online. I bought for GTA 5. If I wanted GTA online, I wouldn't have bought it at launch because I knew it wasn't going to be online for, what was it, 2 weeks after launch. So what I paid for was GTA 5, the single-player game, and what I got was so much better than I could have ever expected. Hands down, my game of the year, GTA 5. And with that taken care of, few last thoughts before I sign off on this thing, because need to get this post-produced and up before iTunes does their stupidity. Remember, if you don't see a new Infinite Lives podcast tomorrow, which would be the 21st, or the day after, 22nd, depending on post-production schedules, check out our website, infinitelives.us, because iTunes will be bad. If you're getting it from Microsoft Music or whatever, or getting off of Double Twist on Android, it should still show up just fine. But you may need download from our website or stream from our website if you're a usual iTunes listener. But just want to have a couple predictions for next year. On one hand, I'm predicting that I'm really going to fall, you know, more into the new generation sometime around March. I'm thinking both consoles will be a whole lot better once they get a system update or two, because they're missing features that were promised, like the suspending games correctly, real good streaming Twitch on the PS4, any streaming Twitch on the Xbox, being able to upload to YouTube on PS4 would be amazing. But especially I'll start liking next generation more, or the current generation, whatever the fuck you want to call it. I'll start liking it a lot more when one thing happens. When Infamous Second Son comes out, because then I'll finally have a AAA title for a new system. And once Watch Dogs comes out, that should hopefully be amazing. Although I am kind of reserving some hype for that, because I don't know, Ubisoft with open world, if it was Rockstar, I could get behind it a lot easier. Or Bethesda. I'm also hoping we hear a real announcement of a Fallout 4 soon. I'm predicting we hear something, in next coming months, but it won't be out next year. And I'm predicting that Elder Scrolls Online is going to bomb horribly. It's going to go the route of, Old Republic, where it's going to go free to play in a damn hurry. And I'm also predicting that, well, podcast will keep going and we're going to keep doing what we do. And I'm predicting that Extra Life 2014 should be pretty damn amazing. So, happy late Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Wookiee Life Day, Happy, on a winter solstice or whatever else, and Happy New Year's. Thanks for listening. Or actually, one last thing I should mention. Another thing I loved this year was learning about one button on my soundboard. So thanks for listening to
The Morning Zoo. Happy New Year's.